This is the Oander Podcast.
You're listening to the Oander Market Insights Podcast, talking to Oander's senior market analysts across the world. And today we're joined by Ed Moyer in New York. Good afternoon from London, Ed. How are you?
Well, thank you for having me.
It has been another extraordinary week for global markets, of course, mainly due to the events in the Ukraine. But let's start with the latest on US inflation, which accelerated to a four-decade high last month, with rent, fuel and food costs climbing even before the invasion of Ukraine. So in a way, these figures won't really tell the story until we know the effect of the rising oil price, which we'll talk about later, and all the other commodities that we've seen really hike up over the last 2 weeks.
Very much so. And I think everyone had this particular inflation report circled on their calendars. This was supposed to be the peak in inflation. That was before the war in Ukraine happened. And when we got the headline number, 7.9%, it was somewhat surprising. I think a lot of traders were anticipating that 8% handle, and still consumer prices at the highest levels in 40 years. And what you're seeing is widespread food, energy, rent, everything is going up. Obviously, the energy, gasoline led the way higher. Those seasonally adjusted was up 6.6% from the prior month. I think that people, you know, when you're buying your groceries, no one was surprised that those were up 1.4%. I think the concern is that, obviously won't be the peak. Right now, I think, you know, you're looking at a even hotter March number, where you could see inflation, go up to 8.2 or 8.3%, and I think that you're really going to see that be fueled by an over 20% month over month jump in gas prices. So it's going to get uglier. These surging energy costs, while we've seen, elevated volatility with crude oil, I think that the key takeaway is that a lot of this inflation is going to be sticky, and it's not going to go away when prices do normalize. And that's what's really concerning. You're probably going to see that, when you take a look at grocery prices, up 8.6% in the past year. That's the most in 40 years, and that's really going to, prove to be some troubling for many households. I think you've seen just everything become more expensive, clothing, the one relief was that, used cars did not necessarily go up, but I think everyone that wanted a car by now probably had one. And some of that could be attributed to the semiconductor chip problem again that we're once again talking about. So economists are going to expect these price increases to remain the theme for these next few months. And, until we have a end in sight for the Ukraine crisis, inflation is just going to get uglier.
And you mentioned that semiconductor chip problem. That surely is only going to get worse, because as we have spoken out before on this podcast, Ed, you need neon gas, a lot of it in Ukraine, for those chips. And even stripping out, as you say, the volatile food and energy costs, the core consumer price index rose by 6.4% on the year. The Fed is widely expected to lift rates next week, which will, amazingly, when you think about it, the first time since 2018. It hopes that that will start to reduce inflation. But bearing in mind a lot of these hikes in the cost of living are down to external events that they really can't control, I mean, how effective are those rate rises when they come going to be?
Well, the Fed has been late to the game in tackling inflation, and now we have this global shock that came from the Ukraine crisis that is leading many economists to believe that the Fed is going to have a gradual approach to removing this accommodation. And what this is going to end up doing is, when we're a few months down the road, we could see the Fed be in a position where, because of their policy mistake in tackling inflation, they might have to be delivering some supersized rate hikes down the road. I think right now there's some concerns that you're going to see a little bit of a slowdown in the first and second quarter. And I think that you're still looking at a strong growth story for the U.S. for this year. And if inflation does not show a firm peak by the, the middle of the summer, and that, a lot of these pricing pressures are starting to improve, the Fed is going to have to become much more aggressive. That's why you're seeing some of these investment banks that were calling for 7 rate hikes for the year. They're standing by their argument. They're not changing their position, because they're abandoning their call for a half point rate increase at the next week's meeting. But they are anticipating that the Fed's going to need to tackle inflation much more aggressively once these short-term risks ease. And I think the Fed is going to be in a difficult spot in a few months. Right now, this upcoming meeting is going to be fairly easy. I think no one is questioning them. I think the market has well priced in that 25 basis point increase, and for the most part, they'll probably do that again at the next meeting. But I think, everyone's going to be fixated on inflation, and it's going to get uglier, and that's going to, keep the pressure on the Fed.
And Jay Powell has admitted they have to be pretty sensitive in terms of those rate rises. So maybe it won't rise 7 times because of the problems for the global economy. I mean, whatever you say about an increased rate possibly leading to lower inflation, how do you control the oil price? It's not possible. If this war gets worse, we could see, some economists have even talked about $200 a barrel, for goodness sake. I mean, that's unsustainable for a global economy, is it not?
I think 130 to 150 is unsustainable. So yes.
We were there almost earlier in the week, weren't we? We saw a approaching $130 a barrel. I think it was about 128, wasn't it? Soaring, as I said, to near record levels, but then pegged back as we enter the final part of this week. Brent crude, last time I looked, was 109, WTI 105. Why is that the case? Are there hopes that negotiations between Russia and Ukraine might alleviate a worse war than we already have?
The geopolitical coverage has been pivotal in what has been driving oil prices. And this week has been an interesting one, because you started the week with fears that, okay, we're possibly going to see that 130 level tested again, and could we eventually see that the because of how tight this oil market is, will there be a chance that we're gonna have another $10 swing higher? There has been a lot of back and forth with these headlines as far as talks. The key headlines for Friday was that Russian President Vladimir Putin saw positive shifts in his country's talks with Ukraine, and it was like risk appetite, came back. Dip buyers said, okay, this is a good sign. Maybe we'll see a ceasefire. And crude obviously, dropped a few dollars off of that. But when you take a look at what happened earlier Friday morning, Russia continued on with their advance with their airstrikes across Western Ukraine. And it looks like some military experts are saying they're repositioning their troops, where they could be making another push for the Ukrainian capital of Kiev. So I think that you're seeing that the markets are becoming a little bit unsure as far as how to trade all these incremental updates. And as far as the other key geopolitical risk on the table, Iran nuclear talks. Over the weekend, there was a high level talks. There was potential that we were going to see a breakthrough. That did not happen. And we're closing out the week where it looks like they're going to pause the Iran nuclear negotiations. And that is, they made it clear to tell everyone that it's a pause. There wasn't a setback, but still, that shows you that there are some major roadblocks there. So we're finishing the week with oil much lower. We were, high 120s. Now we're, 105, 107, around these levels. And you're trying to see why is it lower? And the reason oil turned lower was because of fears that you're now having the market price in more demand destruction for crude. The global economy is not going to need as much crude, given the global inflation story that we're seeing. I think that the expectations are that this is not going to be there's not going to be a quick resolution to the war in Ukraine, and that you're probably going to see economic growth really get pummeled here in the first and probably second quarter, and that is going to, I think, complicate what happens with oil prices, and we also did have the IAE. there's so many energy organizations, but they released the breakdown as far as the tapping of emergency stockpiles, and you can see that there's a coordinated effort to try to limit this oil price appreciation that we've been seeing, and I think right now you're probably going to see that oil is going to remain persistently volatile, but you're still dealing with a tight market, and that even though we are now pricing in some demand destruction for crude, prices should still be supported above $100 just given the fundamentals and how the market is positioned, and that will continue to weigh on many economic recoveries.
Meanwhile, Ed, the Biden administration has unveiled its long-awaited executive order on cryptocurrency regulation. But what does it actually mean for investors?
I think the initial takeaway was that, okay, finally, we're going to see the U.S. government is going to provide more guidelines for this growing industry that needs it. There's been a lot of I think interest in how to become a better market for the American consumer, and what happened was there's been too many Ponzi schemes, there's been too many I think what we're seeing is cases of fraud. There's been hacks. There's been a lot of big risks for the American consumer. And what the Biden administration is going to do is this study is going to eventually come out with some guidelines that will really help provide much more protections for the consumer. And it will also help address some of the big risks that are, I think, really concerning government officials. And I think that you're seeing that the big thing that this also paves the way for is how the U.S. will go about creating their digital dollar. And that is something they're late to the game. China has already been up and running with their digital yuan, and it's proven to gain massive usage, and I think there's been some extreme benefits with that. And you'll see that the U.S. is probably a couple years, of maybe a few years down the road, away from getting close to launching anything, as we're still in the early stages. But U.S. dollars will become digitized, and I think that that's going to really help the government be able to, in the next pandemic or if people need unemployment insurance, you'll be able to see things instantaneously given to people's digital wallets. And I think that would be something that will be well received by Americans. So I think this is a very positive for the space, but as far as what it means for Bitcoin and Ethereum and all these other top coins, it means that there could be some big rules that come down the road that might impact stable coins, and that could deliver a little bit of a shock to cryptos in general. But I think for overall, there is optimism that you'll continue to see this space grow and gain momentum.
I think the important thing was that the tone of this executive order didn't suggest that the government is against the cryptocurrency industry, more that it actually wants to control it and regulate it more. But the future, I suppose, is still bright for crypto.
Very much so. And that's something we, you know, a year ago, you had so many government leaders talking about how can they shut down Bitcoin, and now they're trying to figure out ways to help foster its growth. I think that it's become clear that Bitcoin and Ethereum are driving innovation. And what you'll see is that, you know, people are drawing the comparisons with the internet, but you will see how, you know, this blockchain technology will really help revolutionize so many businesses and help them become much more profitable, much more efficient with keeping track of inventories, payments. And I think that what you'll see is there is this belief that you know, you're going to continue to see this be accepted by many companies. I think there's been massive investments already, and what this does is by the U.S. government providing a digital currency, you'll see that will really help remove a lot of the risk for a lot of businesses, and I think you'll continue to see companies will try to set up their systems to be able to better work on a blockchain environment. So I think there's a lot of excitement here, and this will probably drive I think many new jobs for the U.S. And I think there's a lot of optimism here that you'll continue to see that. This is going to make it very competitive for U.S. banking and payment systems. But I think that in the end, the consumer should win.
Very interesting, Ed. Before we let you go, it's been another crazy week, of course, and who knows what lies ahead in the next 7 days or so. Of course, we've got the U.S. Fed and the Bank of England next week with their respective announcements. And it's nailed on, isn't it, that both the Fed and the Bank of England will raise interest rates, surely.
Yes, they should have a coordinated meeting where they just say we're both raising by 25 basis points.
Yeah, it could have been 50, I suppose.
Well, yes, true. That will dominate the headlines. Those are the main events. And what you'll see is there is a lot of data, you know, none of it will draw as much attention. But for Wall Street, they will pay close attention to U.S. retail sales. You know, Americans are still buying, and the February report should show that. But if we see some, you know, big downside surprises, that is really going to speak to Wall Street that this consumer is perhaps struggling with these inflationary pressures. Because right now it looks like it's handling it. I mean, last week, I said that, you know, the U.S. economy could handle oil at $130 for, I think, 3 months. Like, I think, and I still believe that. But if you start to see significant weakness already before the full impact of the war in Ukraine, that will get a lot more jitters on some of these consumers' discretionary stocks. So I think that's going to be an important event also on Wednesday. You know, obviously we're everything. Coverage on Ukraine, you know, there's an extraordinary meeting with NATO defense ministers on Wednesday. There's a lot to track. In addition to the Fed and the BOE, though, we also have a Turkish central bank rate decision. This one is supposed to be a non-event, but you never know with Turkey. They are expected to keep rates steady. And on to finish out the week, we will also have a couple more rate decisions, and this is where things could get interesting. The BOJ is no change. I feel like since we've started the podcast, it's been the BOJ will keep policy unchanged. But the Russian Central Bank is also scheduled to meet, and that's something, you know, they did have that emergency meeting where they did you know, double interest rates. And what you could see is they may have to raise rates again, and also they might update, you know, how they're handling their FX curve. So that's something that will also be close important to follow. And then also we're going to probably become a little bit more closely watching sovereign rating updates. You know, that happens at typically the end of the week, sometimes, you know, right around the U.S. close or shortly after. You know, Belgium, Spain, European Union, Greece will get rating updates. I think that you're going to see that the markets are just becoming very concerned with how countries are going to be handling their deficits, and eventually, you know, you're going to start to see some countries continue to get their sovereign ratings downgraded, and that could be very troublesome for investments in those specific regions.
Okay, Ed, we look forward to speaking to you again very soon. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
This is the Oanda Podcast.